So just when the fire smoke seems to have gotten as thick and as noxious as it can get, it gets worse. More and more people in the region are wearing masks in public to keep at least some of the smoke out of their lungs. It's not easy when there's that much smoke out there, up to hazardous levels in the Rogue Valley yesterday. And as of today, 6 clean air centers will be open in Humboldt County, where the smoke has frequently reached that hazardous level. Centers are in a number of different communities. They are in 2 in Willow Creek, 1 each in Orleans, Weechpec, and Hoopah, and a 6th center in Eureka is open as of today. We'll get an update on some of the major fires shortly. First, a look into the lungs with a pulmonologist. Dr. Berta Baldovino is a pulmonologist at Providence Health System in Medford and a guest in the studio with me. Dr. Baldovino, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, are you seeing a lot of patients of late as your patient count ticked up a bit with what's been going on with the smoke?
Yes, definitely my COPDers and my asthmatic patients will have a harder time in these weather conditions, and they will have a higher incidence of exacerbations and visits to the ER, etc. That has been also shown in numerous studies.
All right, so the COPD patients are the kind, and people with asthma, the very sensitive groups that we're talking about when we see the listing for unhealthy for sensitive groups.
Yeah, but, I wanted to take this opportunity to highlight some of the other groups that can be affected by these levels of high smoke, like, for example, pregnant women, adults over 65 years of age, the children, whether they have asthma or not, and patients with cardiovascular conditions as well, like patients with heart failure. They can also be affected by the current weather conditions.
So I know we've talked about this a few times before with other people, but the small particles, the PM2.5 that are shown in the air quality index listings, what actually happens with those particles? What is it that they do to the lungs, or what is it that the lungs can't do?
That's a very interesting question. So there are PM or particulate matter molecules in the air every day, and they are produced by numerous other things, not only the wildfires. We actually monitor the PM molecule concentration, and there are numbers of other PM molecules. We are interested in the 2.5 molecule, and the 2.5 is in relationship to the size of the molecule, because these are the smallest molecules that we that are noxious to us.
You're 2.5 microns, which I guess
2.5
is like one-sixth of the thickness of a human hair or something like that?
Yeah, that would be 1 micron is 1 millionth of a meter. So these are really, really tiny little things that can penetrate into the deepest portions of the lung. And when they get access to this alveolar space, they can produce higher levels of inflammation. They're known to cause DNA mutation, which down the line, I don't know, 15, 20 years down the line, may also increase the incidence of lung cancer and the prevalence of lung cancer. And this higher level of inflammation will ultimately end up causing the COPDers to have exacerbations and the asthmatics to have also a harder time breathing. But this overall level of increased inflammation is what ultimately would cause even a healthy individual without COPD and without asthma to have further respiratory problems.
So let's talk about the kinds of things that people can do in advance. I mean, before you go outside, for example, what kinds of precautions can you take when you know you have to go out into the smoke, at least from home to car, for example?
Well, I think that actually the first thing that people need to be asking is, do I really need to be out there? Is it that important for me to go out and do this chore that I need to be doing? Is it really that important? Can it be done later? Can I check the air quality measurements and then pick the time of day that is at the lowest level and then do it then? That would be the first question that I will tell my patients to ask themselves. Do I really need to do that? And then if you really have to do that, then you should consider whether or not a respirator. There are different kinds of respirator, but the ones that we are recommending at the moment will be the particulate matter respirator. Those need to be NIOSH certified. NIOSH is the National Institute for Occupational Safety
and Health.
Yeah. So the mask need to be approved and certified by NIOSH, and you can find them at the regular department store.
And they are the ones that actually filter out the PM2.5 particles, as opposed to the paper masks, which I believe do not.
Yes, the paper masks do not filter those molecules, and particular respirator, they're commonly known as the N95 respirators. There is also the P100, which are a little bit less common at the regular store, but you will find an N95 respirator, and they will filter 95% of the particulate matter. Now, you have to take certain precautions, and not everybody can wear a respirator. For example, if there is a patient that has a known and very severe lung condition or heart failure, and they at baseline have trouble breathing, then you may not feel comfortable with a particular respirator. It may make you feel a little bit more short of breath, and you have to wear it the right way. It has to be tightly fitted over your face, over your nose. It usually has two holders, and they need to go over your head and over the back of your head in a tight fashion. And I should warn, there are a lot of males that have long beards. A particular respirator will not work with a beard, even a one-day beard, that will not work.
It won't seat correctly on the face.
Right? It won't seal.
Okay. We are talking to Dr. Berta Baldovino, who's a pulmonologist with Providence Health System in Medford. I want to come back to her in just a little bit. I want to invite a couple of guests on from the various fires around the region. Kelly Woods is a PIO, public information officer, at the Helena Fire in Northern California. Kelly, are you with us?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And Chris Coates is with us as well from the Salmon August Complex, I believe. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Okay, good morning. Good to have you both here. Kelly, let's start with you, because the Helena Fire is one of those ones that we seem to see every summer, that there's a whole bunch of other stuff going on, and then a new fire starts and immediately starts causing great destruction. Can you give us the update on what has happened so far with the Helena Fire and what you know about its cause?
The cause, I do not know. It's still under investigation as far as I know. As for what's been going on with it, I know that up on the... Now, let's start with the northern part of the fire. Right above Helena and up in that area, we have a lot of black line in now. We've raised the percentage contained up to 30%. They moved it all across the whole, pretty much the north edge of it.
Now, I want to point out, too, this is mostly in Trinity County, right?
Yes, yes, it is. Yeah, once moving over to the northeast over by the monument, heading toward Monument Peak, it is now... on the other side of the Weaver Bali mountain range, and down into the, I know it's one of the Weaver drainages over there on that side. They are watching it very closely. They are putting hand line in, and they do have dozer lines all the way up to the wilderness area. But then they're also putting in hand line all the way up toward Monument Peak, and. That seems to be holding right now. Once they realized what was going on, we haven't been able to fly this because of all the smoke, and we had a plane that actually broke down, so they couldn't fly the actual infrared. And then when they finally did yesterday, they found a lot more areas. Now, what they did last night was they went down into the Junction City area, and they did a major burnout operation down there, closed all that in, and it is now cold along that area, so they're going to wait and paint some more black along there.
All right. We have listeners in Junction City, Oregon, too, and I want to make it quite clear we're not talking about you. We're talking about Junction City, California, in Trinity County. Where have homes been lost thus far, Kelly?
In that area. I'm not sure exactly. I have not been in there. I can't tell you exactly which homes have and which homes haven't. I know there's a lot. I know there was 72 homes that were lost.
And these year-round homes or summer homes or what?
That I couldn't even tell you that much. I believe some of them were year-round and some of them were... summer homes, but I don't know what the difference is. The county sheriff went in and did a survey of everything, and so they're the ones that know exactly which ones that, are. And they have some stuff going on with them down at the where is it? Mountain Chapel, right behind Tops.
Mm-hmm.
They have a bunch of people down there that are that they can get information on which houses the owners and stuff. And there's a lot of people that are in evacuation. Right now, I believe we have around 2,000 of them.
2,000 in evacuation. Okay, I was going to ask you about the number on that. And the acreage on the fire, on the Helena Fire?
On the Helena Fire, it's 14,475 right now. And like I said, the other part, they're the 30% contained.
Okay, and Kelly, Chris Coates, I want to come to you at the Salmon August Complex. I see 58,487 as the latest total and 14% containment there. Give us a little history of the Salmon August fires, where and how long.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you very much for having me on the show. This started on
August 13th, and what we had was a couple different fires that have now blended into what we're calling the Wallow Fire, and then the entire complex is known as the Salmon August Complex. Right now, the latest numbers in this morning is we're at 63,000 acres, actually just above 63,000 acres, with 14% containment. And we're actively suppressing the fire and doing everything we can with the mitigation efforts and the ground crews. It sounds like we've had some of the same challenges that they've had on the Atlanta fire in regarding some aerial attack with that, with the smoke conditions and some other challenges with equipment. We're looking forward to getting some IR flights to get very accurate numbers. We've had to rely on our ground crews to be able to do that, and they're doing a fabulous job out there working hard and getting those numbers. And
so the infrared flights sense the heat through the cloud cover and can tell you approximately how large, I mean, where the fires are hottest.
I'm sorry, say that again?
The infrared allows you to actually sense the heat through the cloud cover so you can get a better idea of what the fire size is.
That is correct, and it tells us exactly where the heat signatures are and really helps us with our strategy and tactics and where we deploy our resources and to accomplish our operational objectives and to meet those in those operational periods. So without that, we are a little bit challenged with that, but we do have some good ground resources providing us with that intel. Currently, for as far as evacuations, we do have an evacuation warning that's been in place at Sawyer's Bar area between Nordheimer and Etna Summit. So we're actively watching that area, and we've prepped that area, done a lot of structure prep, and prepared to take a stance there if need be. But we're feeling pretty good about that area right now. The primary concern today as we go out is the northeast region of our fire and protecting Scotts Valley and the Etna City. We're feeling good about those objectives as well. But we're challenged with the weather, the changing, the thunderstorms, as you know, and your meteorologists had touched on. So all of those things and some new starts just in the area, we're doing everything we can with the resources we have on hand to protect those communities and life safety being our priority.
Did you get lightning on the complex last night?
Yes, we did have quite a few lightning strikes. However, we had one new start that was a small fire that we were able to take care of with the initial TAC resources in the local area and some resources from the complex fire as well. So we got on that quickly and we're able to mitigate that and refocus our efforts back onto the complex. And we're just watching the weather. We've got our incident meteorologist that's providing that with us and helping with the objectives and how we can deploy our resources, our limited resources that we have.
All right. I want to thank both of you guys for joining us to give us the updates. Chris Coates is with the Salmon August Complex, and Kelly Woods is with the Helena Fire. Thanks so much for the updates on what's going on there, both of you. Want to let the folks listening know, too, that the Chetco Bar Fire on the Oregon side, one of the largest concerns, is, as of last report this morning, at 176,770 acres and at 5% containment. That's the one that's been troubling the Brookings area and appears to be moving eastward as well and causing concern. And level one evacuations on the Oregon side, that's the Ready, Set, Go system. That's ready, generally west of Highway 199 in the Illinois Valley. And again, we were talking a bit about smoke because of the issue with the smoke in Etna. I've been looking at the smoke numbers in the Scott Valley of late around that area, Dr. Baldovino, and they're some of the worst I've seen around the region. I mean, what, since you're the pulmonologist here, we are talking to Dr. Berta Baldovino from Providence Health System. Do the numbers mean much to you even? I mean, we can pass the figures around amongst ourselves, those who are not experts, and say, oh my God, 325 in Medford, what does that mean? What does that mean?
There is a paucity of medical literature as to what the numbers are and truly represent, simply because we cannot just light up a fire, expose many people, and then find out exactly what will happen. But we do know that there is no safe limit. In reality, there is no safe limit to as to what you can be exposed to. In general, the level is less than 50. But levels over 25 micrometers per hour of exposure had been associated to deleterious effect. But now here we're talking levels of over 200 and consistently in the Grants Pass area, close to 300 and even above 300. So these are really, really hazardous numbers that can impose very severe health effects.
I'm impressed by what you said a few minutes ago, though, that potentially there are some DNA changes caused by the infiltration of PM2.5 particles into the lungs that you might not know about for potentially decades.
Yeah. And the DNA modification, it can extend beyond what lung tumors, beyond that field. It can also increases the level of allergies that a certain individual can express. So we're talking about milder conditions than very, very severe conditions. And I guess we will know in a couple of years from now what the real repercussions of these fires are in our health.
Well, we've talked about what to do in preparation, asking yourself, for example, if you need to go outside, and if you do go outside, wearing one of the N95 masks. Are there any things you can do once you have been exposed? Any things to do to be nice to your lungs when you've come in from the smoke?
Basically, to keep yourself hydrated, well hydrated. If you have a lung condition, to have your rescue medication ready, and to visit your or call your healthcare provider once you experience the symptoms. And the symptoms can be as mild as just having a headache and a teary eyes and a sore throat, but it can also be chest pain or severe shortness of breath. So in that instance, you either need to call 911 or visit your healthcare provider.
How have you been feeling about that? I mean, what sorts of precautions have you taken while the smoke has been around us?
I don't have a lung condition. I'm really grateful for that. And I've been using the 5-3-1 rule, and I've been trying to reduce my level of outdoor activities and exercise.
5-3-1 visibility?
Yes, the 5-3-1 visibility rule.
So 5 is what? Unhealthy for sensitive groups? 5 miles visibility?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And but everybody needs to really pay close attention that these levels of air quality index are very, very high. And everybody will be affected one way or another by this.
All right. Not the best news, but not altogether surprising either. But I'm glad we had an expert here to help us understand this a little better. Dr. Berta Baldovino is a pulmonologist working at a Providence Health System in Medford. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you for having me.